never satisfied.
All right, I will say good morning. So our shiur this morning is dedicated by Mr. and Mrs. Martyr in memory of Mr. Martyr's Hilda Martyr, Mother Hilda Martyr, Hinda Bas Aaron Yosef Zichrono Livracha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the neshama has an aliyah and the family a nechama. We also dedicate our learning for the hatzlacha of Shmuel Zelig Menachem Ben Lipsha. We hope that he's matzliach b'chol derachav. All right, so let's begin. We're picking up Emirat Hashem Daf Lamid today. So the right now, Lamid Aleph. Okay, good. That's fine. Let's do Lamid. Right. Well, we're on Lamid Aleph Beis. We're on Lamid Aleph Beis. We're picking up. Today's daf, okay, start again. Good morning, everyone. Today's daf is daf Lamed Aleph 31. We are picking up on daf Lamed Amud Beis 30b. So says the Gemara the following. So we'll say, remember, we're picking up Ella. So actually, we have a lot to do today. It's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18 lines up from the bottom on 30b on Lamed Amud Beis. So remember, again, the Gemara is trying to understand. We left off with an interesting case. Ella Amra Meshar Shibrid Ravidi Hachi Kamar. This is the case that the Bryce is referring to. Hachi Kamar. He saw Shamar the Ben Levi. If Yisrael says to a Ben Levi, so meaning literally the son of a Levi, who's a Levi himself, of course, Maestro La Avicha Biadi. I have some Maestrishon that belongs to your father in my possession. Halach Domov. Now remember again, in this case, the Yisrael himself wants possession of the Maestrishon. So remember again, as opposed to Truma, which is the portion of the Kohanim that can only be consumed by Kohanim, Maestrishon can be consumed by Yisrael as well. So in this case over here, the Yisrael saying to the Levi, look, I've got some Maestrishon that belong to your father in my hands. I'd like to pay you for it, and I'd like to be able to keep it. So what's the halacha? In Choshishin Shema Asal Aviv Trumas Maestr Amakom Acher. We need not be concerned that the father of this Levi designated the Maaser Rishon that's in the possession of the Yisrael as Trumas Maaser for some other crop that the Levi may have had. Otherwise, remember again, Levi gets Maaser Rishon, and Levi is obligated to separate out Trumas Maaser, which is a portion for the coin, from his Maaser Rishon. So the concern we'd have over here is if Yisrael is telling Ben Levi, I have some of the Maaser Rishon of your father in my possession, and I want to buy it from you. So we're not choshesh that the father of the Levi designated the Maaser Rishon that was in the possession of Yisrael as Trumas Maaser for some other crop he had. However, on the other hand, Kur Maaser L'Avicha Biyadi, but if the Yisrael says, I have a kur is a measurement, I have a kur of Maaser Rishon that belongs to your father in my possession, v'helach tamav, and I want to pay you for it and keep it, choshesh shen shema aso aviv trumas Maaser amalkum acher. But say, in that case, where the measurement of the amount of the Maaser Rishon was known, there is a concern that perhaps the father of the Levi did in fact designate that produce as Trumas Maaser for something else. So the Gemara says, V'chin me'achshidu chaveyam mitrum shloman amokov. So we'll say there's another issue at play over here, which is that in general, when you take Trumas and Maaseros, ideally it's supposed to be what's called min amokov. Min amokov means that you're supposed to go ahead and take it from proximity to where the produce is. Meaning, on a technical level, if I have produce here and I have produce in New Jersey, I could technically speaking designate produce here as Trumos and Maestros for my produce in New Jersey. Technically it works. It is not halachically preferable. Halachically we would rather that you separate out minamukov. Minamukov means right next to the produce that you're actually tithing. Chaveirim, which is Tamidi Chachamim, bless you, we're very careful to only take Trumos and Maestros minamukov from proximity. So the Gemara says, are you Choshesh, the father of this Levi, that he separated Trumos and Maestros, Shalom minamukov, and Amar Ravashi, therefore Ravashi is, here's the case. Hachi Kamar, Ben Yisrael Shomer LeLevi, listen to this case. So the son of Yisrael that said to a Levi, Kach Amar Li Abba, so we'll say, so listen, so in this case over here, the Ben Yisrael is saying, look, my father before he died gave me the following instructions. Meister Yesh Lecha Biyadi. Oh, Meister La'avicha Biyadi. My father told me that he has some Meister Rishon that belongs to you, Levi, or that he had some Meister Rishon that belonged to your father. So what's the halacha?
Choshishin l'trumas meiser shebo, kevan delokitz. Excuse me. Choshishin l'trumas meiser shebo, kevan delokitz. Lo have metakin la balabais. So I'll say in this case over here, we're choshesh that trumas meiser was not separated from it. Why? Because since the amount was not defined, therefore there's no chashash that the Yisrael father separated the amount of trumas meiser. On the other hand, kor meiser lecha biyadi. Oh, kor meiser la'avicha biyadi. If on the other hand, the son of the Yisrael says, my father told me that I have a kor of your meiser yishon in my hand, or a kor of your father's meiser yishon in my hand, then what? Ein choshishin l'trumas meiser shebo. We need not be concerned that trumas meiser was not separated. Why? Kevan dikitz, takuni takni balabais. The balabas must have gone ahead and separated the trumas meiser. So both say, this case is exceptionally strange, because now what the Gemara is suggesting is that what we're talking about over here is whether or not, not that the Levi designated the produce as trumas meiser, but rather what are we discussing? If the Yisrael owner himself designated trumas meiser from the Meiser Rishon of Levi. And as we'll say, what we're discussing over here now is that the Yisrael, when he separated his Meiser Rishon, did he also separate Trumas Meiser? So the Gemara says, V'chiyesh lo rishos ha-balabais l'trum Trumas Meiser. Does the Yisrael Balabas, who's separating out Meiser Rishon, does he have the right, does he have the ability, does he have the license to separate out Trumas Meiser from Meiser Rishon? As well, so you hear what the Gemara is asking? Normally, the way we assume tithes work is how? I'm Yisrael. I separate out Meiser Rishon, I give it to the Levi. I separate out Truma, I give it to the Kohen. The Levi then takes his portion. He separates out his Trumas Meiser, which is his portion for the Kohen, from his Levitic portion. Now the Gemara seems to be suggesting that Lamaisa, the Yisrael Balabas, somehow has the power to separate out Trumas Meiser as well. Is that true? So the Gemara says, in. Yes, it is. A Yisrael farmer could separate out not only Meiser Rishon, but could also designate the Trumas Meiser from the Meiser Rishon. How do we know that? Abba, so the Gemara says, in Abba Lazar ben Gamla, who disanyo, Abba Lazar ben Gamla, Omer Abba Lazar ben Gamla says, V'nechshav lachem trumaschem, the Pasuk says, it will be considered to you like your trumos, plural, top of Lamed Aleph. B'shtei trumos, akos of medaber, the Pasuk is talking about two different trumos. Achos truma gidola v'achos truma smaiser. We'll say one is truma gidola. So truma gidola is what we call truma. And one is truma smaiser, which remember is the portion that is separated from truma, ultimately to go ahead and be the portion of, truma smaiser separated from maiser rishon, to be the portion of the Kohen. So the Gemara's teach, Abba Lazar ben Gamla saying that the Yisrael has the ability to separate out truma, and also has the ability to separate out truma smaiser. So the Gemara says, where do we know that from? So, kashim shetruma gidola nitlis ba'omed u'b'machshava. So we'll say the same way that truma gidola can be separated out ba'omed. So we'll say, omed means the following. You understand that when it comes to truma, there is no shear for truma. There's no shear for truma. The Gemara says, if you're generous, right? If they were generous, you would give 1/40, right? Benoni was 1/50, and if you're stingy, it's 1/60. But the idea is there's no explicit amount. So when you give truma, omed means evaluate. You know, you could kind of a guesstimate. You could just designate some basic amount, just by omed, just evaluating it. Ubimachshava. And this is actually very interesting as well. Truma gidola. When we say truma gidola is another word for truma. Truma can be separated from machshava. Machshava means thought. In other words, you need not verbally articulate that you are separating out a particular amount or a particular, but as long as you think it, that makes it binding. Which I will say you should know is not unique necessarily by truma. That usually is a din by general tzedakah. If a person has a kabbalah in their mind to give tzedakah, even if I did not explicitly articulate it, according to many poskim, that takes on a binding obligation of tzedakah. So in that respect, truma, so remember, matnos kahuna, matnos leviyah, fall under the umbrella of tzedakah. Therefore, the Gemara says, if you think your truma obligation, that becomes binding. So again, the pasuk equates, because it uses the plural, it equates ultimately again truma gedola with truma smaiser, and therefore again the same way that when it comes to regular truma, you could take it with evaluation, meaning you don't have to be specific with the amount. And you could just, if you just cognitively separate it or identify it, it's binding. Kach Trumas Meiser, Nitalis Ba'om Machshava, so to Trumas Meiser, which remember is the portion, which is the portion separated from the Meiser Rishon, the Levi's Meiser Rishon for the Kohen, so to Trumas Meiser can be taken Ba'omet with evaluation, Ubi Machshava, and through thought. Ukishim Shiyesh Lorishos Labala Bayis Litrom Truma Gidola, and the same way that the Balabas, the owner of the produce, the Yisrael, has the ability to separate out Truma Gidola, Kach Yesh Rishos LeBalabayis, Litrum Trumas Meiser. So to the Balabayis has the right to separate out the Trumas Meiser. Okay, therefore, Aloch LeMeiser, the Gemara sets up the case over here, as Yisrael is separating out the Trumas Meiser, and based on Xeris HaKosov of Nechshav Lachem Trumaschem, because the Torah uses the plural of Trumaschem, both Trumas, therefore the same way that Truma Gidola, the Yisrael could separate it out, so to Trumas Meiser, the Yisrael could separate it out as well. Good, says the Mishnah, Haminiach Peros Lios Mafrish Shalein Trumas Meiseros. So we'll say, so now, this is very interesting. So now, even though we just said before that in an ideal sense, you're supposed to separate out Mina Mukov, you're supposed to, you mean you're supposed to tithe with proximity. Remember again, so if you can imagine, if I'm separating out Trumas, essentially like I have two piles. I have one pile of fruit that I want to consume, and one pile of fruit that I'm designated as tithe. So in the ideal sense, those two piles should be in close proximity to each other. However, as you pointed out just before, lemaisa, again, it's not true. You can even be turned, you can even go ahead and tithe shalom in amukov without proximity. So that's the case the Mishnah is dealing with over here. So listen to this situation. So let's say I have a pile of fruit. I have a pile of fruit that I want to designate as my truma and meiser pile. So listen to this cheshbon. So I have a pile of fruit in my basement, and essentially I travel a lot. So when I go away, I don't want to have to worry about actively separating out trumas and meisers. So instead, I know I have whatever it is, two core of fruit in my basement, and every time I want to eat something, I'm going to designate some part of the fruit in my basement as trumas and meisers for the food that I have with me, thereby effectively go ahead and tithe the food that I'm eating without having to deal with shmos and maestros wherever I may be. And I'll both say, that works. That works. You should know, by the way, well, actually, I'm not going to get into it. This discussion actually is very interesting because it comes up in the world of commercial kashrus, specifically in commercial bakeries where they have to take challah. You have to take challah whenever you bake dough. So this is interesting because generally in most bakeries, commercial bakeries, they don't have a mashkiach there. I mean, they have a mashkiach, but he's not separating challah from every single batch of dough. So they have interesting halachic mechanisms to deal with this, which rely on this. But again, for another time, for a legal holiday series. I'm sorry. It's kosher. I mean, if you eat that, it's good for you. You can eat it. So says the Mishnah. So Moses, listen to this. So the case over here is I'm going ahead and leaving a pile of truma fruit. But again, the chap over here is I'm not near that truma fruit. So again, remember that truma fruit is in my house, and I'm traveling. I'm traveling elsewhere. So watch this. Remember the idea over here is, so let's say now, my pile of truma fruit is in my house in Baltimore, and I'm traveling to New York. So I'm going to be in New York for a week. So now I'm going to eat, and I'm separating out trumas and maestros. And the trumas and maestros I'm designating are in my basement in Baltimore. Now the reality is, the Mishnah says, I can operate on the chazaka that fruit in my basement still exists. Because remember, again, if there was a flood or something happened, or animals ate the fruit, so the mice say, again, I'm eating tevel. So the Mishnah, tevel means untithed produce. So the idea over here is that I left that pile of fruit in my basement. There's a chazaka that the pile of fruit, we'll say, you see, by the way, this is the common theme on all of these Mishnayos. The common theme is chazaka. So because when I left my house, the pile of fruit was there, I could assume even a week later when I'm in New York that the pile of fruit is still there, and I can continue to designate trumos and maestros for that on that pile of fruit and continue to eat my food. So the Gemara says, im avdu. So we'll say, let's say, now here's the interesting case, and this is really fascinating. Let's say I come back home. After a week, and what happens? Fruit's not there. fruit's not there, right? Somebody stole my truma pile. So what happens? We'll say. So now the shaila is what? The shaila is so. At what? So now here's what I know. It's quite possible that I have to re-tithe produce because it's possible that trumas that I thought I took, I didn't really take because the pile was gone. The shaila is what? I don't know when the fruit was stolen. So for the last week, I've been designating trumos and maisros on that pile. So at what point in time do I assume that the pile, until what point in time do I assume the pile was intact? So you should know, you already see, by the way, this case, the application of this case, is so far-reaching. In general, whenever you have changes in chazakah, and you don't know when the change itself occurred, how long can you assume that the last known status quo was actually in place? We're going to see other examples of this. So, Rabbi Elazar says that you could assume that the status quo was in effect until me'es le'es. Now, we're going to define in the Gemara what this means. So, me'es le'es generally means 24 hours. Now, what 24 hours Rabbi Elazar is talking about, we'll have to see in the Gemara. Rabbi Huda says, so just as an aside, now that we're talking about the fact that sometimes the status of produce changes, Rabbi Huda says, "B'shlosha prakim bot kines hayayin." Both say there are three times throughout the year that you have to check wine. In other words, why do you have to check wine? Rashi says, "Shenichu lios mafreshlein." So let's listen to this. Let's say same thing. Let's say I have a few wine barrels that I've separated out as truma and meister wine. So that means throughout the year I drink, and whenever I drink, I go ahead and I designate that in that barrel in my basement, it should be designated as truma semester of the wine I'm about to drink. So Rabbi Elazar, so the Gemara now says, Rabbi Huda says, three times throughout that you have to check on your wine that it didn't turn to vinegar. Because we'll say, if the wine turned to vinegar, you can't use it for tithes for wine. In other words, you could tithe it for vinegar, but you can't, but in order to be able to be usable for tithing for wine, it has to be actual wine. So three times throughout the year, essentially, Rabbi Huda is saying, you have to check that your wine didn't turn. When do you have to check? Number one, Bikidim shel motzei chag, when the eastern wind begins to blow after Sukkis, ubotzas smadar, when the grapevines begin to bud, ubishas knisas mayim beboser, and when the grapes themselves begin to fill with moisture. At these times, I guess the wine is more prone to turn, so you have to check on the wine at these three times. Fine, says the Gemara. My meis leis. So remember, the most important thing. I'm sorry.
For Pesach, ironically.
Not before now. Oh well, the truth is, Hotzas Madar Mshas Knesas Mayim Baboser is a little bit closer to spring, a little bit closer to spring. So it's not exactly Pesach time, but it's not far between Tu B'Shvat and Pesach. So the Gemara says, "So we'll say Mayim Eis Leis." So this is interesting. So what's Meis Leis? Now remember again. Let's go back for just a moment. So remember, I went ahead. I'm going out of town. I set up my Meiser pile in my basement. And then what happens? I go out of town and I'm tithing like a maniac, right? I'm mamish. So what happens? Every single time I eat something, I'm designating trumas and meisers on the pile in my basement. I come back home a week later, pile's gone. So now the shaila is, remember again, Rabbi Elazar said in the Mishnah, you're okay me'eis le'eis for 24 hours. What does that mean? So we'll say machlokes. Rabbi Yochanan omer me'eis le'eis shel b'dika. So Rabbi Yochanan says that you're covered for up until the 24 hours before the time that you checked it. What does that mean? Look at Rashi. Me'eis le'eis shel b'dika. Kishabatkan u'matzan avudin. Choshesh shema me'esmo be'eis hazos avdu. So let's play this out. Keep it simple. I leave my house. I leave my pile on Sunday. I'm out of town for a week. I come back the next Sunday. That's not a good case. Let's say I come back on Friday. Let's keep it easy. I come back on Friday morning. So what happens? Says Rabbi Yochanan, I find the pile is gone or the pile is rotted, whatever it is, it's not usable anymore. So I will say, what does Rabbi Yochanan say? Rabbi Yochanan says that I could assume that the pile was intact up until the last 24 hours. In other words, we both say, what Rabbi Yochanan really holds is that Lamaisa and Chazaka really says that what? That status quo remains intact until I know bevadoos that it's changed. So if you want to go out, you know, out biblical law, so what I would say is, when does the Chazaka change? When does it change? the moment I find it. But up until that point in time, I could assume the chazaka was intact. Midrabanon, we say that we assume that the chazaka was not there for the last 24 hours. So let's say I come back Friday morning, 9 o'clock, I find out that the pile was not there. Rabbi Yochanan will say, anything you tithe within the last 24 hours, meaning between Thursday morning and Friday morning, you have to retithe. But anything before the last 24 hours, you could assume the pile was intact and you don't have to retithe. I'm sorry? So the svari is that the Rabbanon were machmir, it's a chumrah, for the last 24 hours. Meaning, because again, midoraisa, when you say chazaka, we assume chazaka remains intact until you know that it's no longer intact. Midrabbanon will be machmir, that it changed over the last 24 hours, but further back before the last 24 hours, you don't have to be choshesh. And Rabbi Elazar ben Antigonus, says, no, Bishr Rabbi Elazar, says, this is Rabbi Yanai. So Amud Beis, no. Me'eis le'eis shal hanacha. Both I listen to this. What does it mean? It means that the chazaka only works for what? For the first 24 hours after you left the fruit in the basement. But after the first 24 hours, all bets are off. Rashi says, Shalanacha, Hareze Choshesh Lemafreya, Kala Yamim. Ad me'eis la'eis shal hanacha rishona yom echad shalayim mechazkin lo becheskas kayamin will give you a chazaka that the fruit was intact for the first 24 hours biyadua umisham ad kan safek v'yachzir v'yachzir. So we'll say here this fundamental machlokes. So this is the ambiguity in the Mishnah. Remember, we'll say they're arguing on Rabbi Elazar, because Rabbi Elazar says if you come back home and you find that the fruit is not intact, the chazaka only works me'eis la'eis. What is me'eis la'eis? Rabbi Yochanan says me'eis la'eis means we assume that the fruit was only not intact for the 24 hours previous to you finding it. So you found it Friday morning, no problem. Everything between Thursday morning and Friday morning you have to retithe, but anything before that is absolutely okay. Rabbi Elazar ben Antigonus says no, me'eis la'eis means if it's gone now, the only thing you could assume is that what? For the first 24 hours it was there. After that first 24 hours, you could no longer assume that it was there. So the Gemara says, Tnan, im avdu hareze choshesh mi'eis le'eis. So what did the Mishnah say? If the fruit was lost, you have to be choshesh mi'eis le'eis. Bishlam alaman damar me'eis le'eis shal bedika. So according to the opinion who says that you have to be choshesh for the previous 24 hours after you found it, so this lashon makes sense. Choshesh and me'eis la'eis would mean that you have to be choshesh that for the last 24 hours, the fruit also was not there. I found it Friday morning at 9 o'clock. I have to be choshesh that since Thursday morning, 9 o'clock, the fruit was no longer there. But according to Mandarma, who says that no, me'eis la'eis means that what? That you can only assume that the fruit was intact for the first 24 hours after it was placed there. What does it mean, me'eis la'eis? It should say, ad me'eis la'eis. What it should say is from the time that you placed it there, ad me'eis la'eis, until the first 24 hours, the chazak is good. After that, not. To which the Gemara says, Kashya, you're right. So the Gemara says, will say that the wording seems to support the opinion, ultimately, again, of Rabbi Yochanan, that me'eis la'eis ultimately means what? That me'eis la'eis means that you could assume that the chazaka remains intact until the 24 hours prior to the discovery of the fruit. So if I come back Friday morning, I can assume the chazaka is that what? The fruit was intact until when? Until Thursday morning, 9 o'clock. But anything before that, the fruit was intact. Therefore, again, l'maisa, Rabbi Yochanan would say, that if anything you tithe over the 24 hours between Thursday, 9 o'clock and Friday morning, 9 o'clock, Friday morning, 9 o'clock being the point of discovery, has to go and be retired, but anything before that is absolutely okay. Divir Rebbe Lazar. These are the words of Rebbe Lazar. Remember again, Rebbe Lazar in the Mishnah was the one who said, Me'eis la'eis. So says the Gemara, Amar Rebbe Lazar. So also remember, Rebbe Lazar in the Mishnah is the Tana Rebbe Lazar. Amar Rebbe Lazar over is the Amoro Rebbe Lazar. So the Amoro Rebbe Lazar said, Chalukin alav chavev al Rabbi Elazar. So Rebbe Lazar's friends disagreed with him. Rebbe Lazar said, what does it mean his friends? Now, what the Gemara is going to say over here is that this discussion over here about when it was, and this is really, it's riveting. Because it's riveting because it's a fundamental discussion about chazaka. So Rebbe Elazar is saying over here, now the assumption, by the way, is that what Rebbe Elazar is saying over here by fruit is not just by fruit. Rebbe Elazar would hold this by any case of chazaka. Rebbe Elazar essentially says that l'maisa, if you have a chazaka, and then you come back to discover that what? That the chazaka you thought was intact, was in place, is in fact what? Not in place. Rabbi Elazar says, you have your right to assume that the chazakah was in place. Let's go with Rabbi Yochanan for now. You have a right to assume that the chazakah was in place up until when? Up until the 24 hours prior to your discovery that the chazakah was no longer in place. So the Gemara just points out, by the way, Rabbi Elazar's friends disagree with him. Where do they disagree with him? Disnan mikvah shenimdad v'nimtza chaser. Rabbi says, here's another great case. Let's say you had a mikvah, and they measured the mikvah, and it turns out that's what? The mikvah has 39 sa'ah instead of 40 sa'ah. Okay, 39 sa'ah instead of 40 sa'ah. So we'll say, so therefore what? So now, what's the shayla? What's the shayla? Let's say the last time you measured the mikvah, by the way, was like last year. I mean, not advisable. For sure, always measure the mikvah. I didn't measure for, let's actually keep it easy. Last week. So I didn't measure, I measured the mikvah, it's now Sunday, I measured the mikvah last Sunday. So what's the halacha? So the Gemara Nimtza Chaser, Kol Taro Shenasu Aga Bavl Mafreya, Bein Birshus Ayachar, Bein Birshus Ram Tmeos. Shabbos said, anything that was purified in that mikvah, we're not going to get into right now, Rosh Hashayachar, Rosh Hashayachar, we saw that in Sota, right? Lemaisa again, are Tmeos. Shabbos said, it's Tamei. So let's say, so what does this opinion say? This opinion says that Lemaisa, now we'll say, what does Tmeos mean? Tmeos means that everything that you did in that mikvah, up until the last time you knew with certainty that mikvah was kosher, it's tameh. In other words, this opinion, unlike Rabbi Elazar who says, and remember, how would Rabbi Elazar pass it in this case? Rabbi Elazar would say that essentially anything done in that mikvah until the 24 hours prior to the discovery that the mikvah was chaser is tahar. Only anything done, right? Anything done in the last 24 hours would be problematic. So his friends, or Elazar's colleagues, say no. Anything done in that mikvah until the last time you measured the mikvah, knew bevados that it was kasher, is tameh. So the Gemara says pshita. Pshita chalukin. So why does the Gemara need to tell me over here that Rabbi Elazar's friends argue on him? It's pretty obvious. Mal detema, because I might have thought, what does it mean when his friends say, my lemafreya, everything that was done beforehand is tameh, maybe me'eis leis. Hi, maybe they only meant Lamafreya 24 hours. Kamash Molam, no. Kamash Molam said that these guys, these individuals, Rabbi Elazar's colleagues mean business. And when they say Lamafreya means what, Rabbi Elazar? Everything that was done in that mikvah until the point in time that you knew that it was last kasher are in fact going to be tameh, and everything needs to be repurified. So Rabbi Elazar, a yesodistic fundamental machlokis over here between Rabbi Elazar and his friends. I'm also like, it's not so crazy. All the friends require is that what? Is that what? That you have a constant check. Which, by the way, is not so crazy. I'll tell you why it's not so crazy. I'm going to tell you why it's not so crazy. Because I'm also saying, because Lemaisa, again, what they will say is, Chazakah is only something that you rely upon when? When? When you can't clarify with your own eyes. But if you could clarify yourself, why in a million years would you ever rely on chazakah? Which Rabbi Elazar says, so again, and Rabbi Elazar will say, because that's what chazakah means. I'll give you the perfect example of this. You know, the halacha is, every morning, when you put on your talis, you're supposed to check your tzitzis. So let me tell you if I have time for this. I don't have time for this, but I'm telling you anyway. So every morning, when you put on your talis, you're supposed to check your tzitzis, right? In fact, the Arizal says that tzitzis is an acronym for Tzadik Yifrod Tzitziyosav Tamid. That I'm supposed to literally pull apart the strings of my talis and I'm supposed to check the knots. So Mishnah Berurah paskins that if you know that when you put away your talis yesterday, nothing happened to it. It's been sitting in my talis back in the interim. And yesterday morning I checked it, or 5 mornings ago I checked it and it was fine. But Mishnah Berurah says, you don't have to check it. You have a chazakah. So why am I showing this to the halacha? Because you see this concept. But why not check it? It's right here. I mean, it's on my body. It's not a big deal. Because the idea is that sometimes what chazakah does say is, if there is no known change in the status quo, chazakah says, even though you can check it, you don't have to check it. So what's really happening over here is a fundamental machlokas in chazakah. It's really interesting between Rabbi Elazar and his colleagues. Rabbi Elazar says, chazakah says, not only is there a status quo, but if there is no known change to the status quo, there is no halachic imperative to check.
The colleagues say that's not true. Chazaka tells you that if you can't check, you don't have to check. But if you can check, you absolutely should check. That's the fundamental machlokes. Therefore, Rabbi Elazar says that if there is a change in the status quo, I only have to assume that change occurred when? In the last 24 hours. But 24 hours prior, I assume the status quo is in place because there was no obligation to doubt the status quo. The colleagues, the chaveru of his colleagues say it's not true because you're not really supposed to rely on chazaka. Any situation, you can be mevarer the circumstances yourself. Therefore, if the status quo changed, we assume the status quo changes. The change goes back to when? The last time you knew with certainty that this particular item was, well, quote unquote, kosher existence, 40 sal, you fill in the blank. So you saw the stick machlokas between the two. Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Gimel Prakim. So remember again, Rabbi Yehuda says, you have to check your wine to make sure that the wine did not turn at three points throughout the year. Says the Gemara, Biktana, Bikidum Shalmotzi Achag Shaltakufa. So, remember, the first time you have to check the wine is when the eastern wind begins to blow after Sukkis. So we learned in Ebraica that's only true if Matzei Sukkis occurs after the autumnal equinox. So again, because right, as long as the autumnal equinox occurred, then you have to be choshish that maybe the easterly wind, or else we're going to see the eastern wind is a hot wind. So the concern is that maybe that hot wind caused the wine to turn, but that wind is only powerful after the autumnal equinox. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says, Begimel Prakim Mocher Nesatvua, there are three times throughout the year where you should sell wheat. You should sell wheat. When should you sell the wheat? Lefnei Azera, before the planting season. B'Shas Azera, at the beginning of the planting season. U'B'Pros HaPesach, and before Pros, we'll say literally means 15 days before Pesach. U'B'Shosh HaPrakim Mocher Nesai, and there are three times throughout the year. We'll say, meaning, these are times, the Gemara is saying, we're going to see what the Nafkamina is. These are times where people are buying seed. So there are three times throughout the year where you should buy wine. Beprosa Pesach, 15 days before Pesach. Ubeprosa Tzeres, 15 days before Shavuos. Ubeprosa Chag, and 15 days before Sukkot. In other words, before every Yontif. Before every Yontif. V'shemen, when should you buy oil? Me'atzeres ve'ilich, from Shavuos and on. So first of all, what is this meaning? What's the nafkamina of these dates? So all this is actually very interesting. Amar Rav v'Tamar Rav Papa l'shutfin. The ramification is for partnership. Listen to this. Let's say I have a partner. I have a partner in the wheat, wine, or oil business. And let's say, for argument's sake, now it's 15 days before Pesach. Now, normally, if I'm a partner in a business, I have to ask my partner's rishus before I sell anything. Except when what? When it's the normal time to sell these items. If it's the normal time to sell these items, then I don't have to ask my partner's permission. I could sell the pruta. So I both say, now understand the novelty in this. The halacha is normally, again, without getting into the technical details, but lemaisa, if I have a partner and I take it on my own to sell, let's say, our merchandise, because I think I have the deal of the century. And then what happens? It ends up being a loss. The partner who sold the merchandise without the consent of the other partner is liable for the loss. Meaning, both said normally losses, assuming that in the absence of another partnership agreement, the assumption is losses and profits are shared equally. But if one partner acted on his own in an irresponsible fashion because he thought he had a good deal, then lemaisa, again, what? He has to bear the loss. If, however, he sold during the time where it was normal to conduct business and there was a loss, that loss is shared equally. Why? Because the partner was acting in good faith on behalf of the partnership. So that's why these dates are important. Mikan ve'elech, what about after these dates, my Amarava kol yom ha'perkim? So I'll say, I'm sorry, I kicked that. After these dates, once these dates have passed, then it's normal to be able to sell the wheat, to sell the wine, to sell the oil. So the pasuk says, "Vahi kizrach hashemesh, vayiman alukim ruach kadim charishis." So we'll say now we're going to say for Yonah. The pasuk says, and it was when the sun came out that HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and summoned ruach kadim, is an easterly wind, charishis. Rav will say this is talking about, by the way, after Nineveh did tshuva, Yonah is very distressed. He sets up shop outside of the city because he thinks that they're going to relapse and he wants to see them relapse and get punished by God. So what happens? HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and brought out the sun and he summoned a strong easterly wind, charishis. My charishis, Rav Yehuda,
It's such a strong wind that when it blows against the sea, it creates furrows. In other words, waves. It's such a strong wind that when it blows against the water, it creates waves. If that's the case, I understand why the pasuk says Vatach Hashemesh al Rosh Yonah v'yisalif, that the sun became so strong on the head of Yonah, and he became faint. Now, well, here's the problem. If you tell me that the eastern wind is so strong that it creates waves, that means it blows a lot. Yet the pasuk says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought out the sun, and the sun, the heat of the sun was so strong, was so stifling, because what? Because there was no breeze. So which one is it? Does the eastern wind create a breeze, or doesn't it create a breeze? Ela Amar Rabba, B'shasha min HaSheves, Mishatekes kol haruchos mipaneha. Rather, what it means is the following. At the time that the easterly wind blows, it silences all of the other winds in its presence. In other words, we're going to see that there are certain winds that bring a cool breeze, certain winds that bring a hot breeze. The easterly wind brings a hot breeze, and not only that, it's stronger than all of the other winds. So when it blows, nothing else can. V'hainu d'chsev asher begadecha chamim, Bashkeit eretz midarom. So the pasuk means when it says your clothing becomes hot when the silence comes from the south. When is your clothing hot upon you? Ultimately, again, at the time when there is a silence from the land of the south, when the easterly wind blows, Mishatekes kalaruchos mipaneh, silences all of the other winds from in front of it. Rav Huna v'Rav Chista v'yasvi. So we'll listen to this. Rav Huna and Rav Chista were sitting. They were sitting and learning. Chalif va'azil geniva alayu. So we'll say, what happens? So geniva passed by them. Amar chad l'chavrei. So one of the people said to the other, meaning Rav Huna, well, it's not clear who said to him, but one of them, Rav Huna said to Rav Chista, for argument's sake, Nekom mikamei debar urion. You know, Geniva is a Talmud Chacham. We should stand up in front of him. Amar lei idach, bar urion bosa means a Talmud Chacham, literally a son of light. Amazing, that's how Talmud Chacham is referred to, someone who infuses light into this world. Amar lei idach, bosa, listen to this. The other one responded, Mikamei palgon nekom. You think we should stand up in front of a quarrelsome person? It's true. Geniva is a big Talmud Chacham, but you know what? He's also a big Baal Machlokes. And I will say, by the way, if you look at Rashi, Palgar, Rashi says Baal Meriva, Shahai Salom Meriva Imar Ukva. If you remember again, so Geniva was a Baal Machlokes, and he constantly fought with Mar Ukva. Abbas, I also remember we actually had this case earlier in the Masechta, where Mar Ukva went ahead and was discussing people who were making his life miserable. Who was making Mar Ukva's life miserable? It was again Geniva. So I say, see, hear this? So it's true he's a Talmud Chacham, but he's also a quarrelsome individual. So it's nice, he has a lot of Torah knowledge, but he's a quarrelsome person. Maybe you shouldn't stand up for such a person. But I'll say, as they're having this discussion, what happens? Asa'ihu legabaihu. So Geniva came over to them. Amr lo b'mayas kisu. So he said to them, "Nu, what are you guys learning? Amru lei baruchos. So they said to him, we're learning about the winds. So just you should know as an aside, just I'll tell you something interesting. Actually, I'll tell you afterwards. So Amrle Baruchos. Amrlehu. So Braganiva said, "Oh, you're learning about the Ruchos. Let me tell you something interesting about the Ruchos." Amrlehu. Haki Amrav Khanan Barava Amarav. This is what Rav Khanan Barava said in the name of Rav. Dalid Ruchos Menashvos Bechol Yom. There are four winds that blow every single day. The Ruach Tsefonis Menasheves Umkulon. And it is the northern wind that blows with each of them. She'ol molekein, because without the northern wind, ein ha'olam miskayim afilu sha'achas. The world would not endure even for one moment. V'ruach deromis kasha mikulon. And the most difficult wind is the southern wind. V'ol molek benetz ma'amida. And we're not, we'll say benetz is a malach. We're not for the malach benetz, who stands in front of the southern wind and blunts its impact upon the world. The southern wind could literally destroy the entire world. Because the pasuk says, he quotes over here, from the pasuk in Iyov, Hamibinascha Yevad Nates Yifrosh Kinafav Letemon. So literally again, so remember Habinascha Yavo Nates without understanding. Yavar Nates, Yafrosh Kinafav Letemon. He spreads out his wings to the south. Ravav Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Havi Yasvi, Khalif Va'az Rav Nachman. So we'll say Rav and Rav Nachman were sitting and Rav Nachman passed by them. Excuse me, Va'az Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov, Di Yasiv Bigu Harka Didava. Sarbala de Karsi. So we'll say, so remember again, Rava and Rav Nachman are sitting and learning. Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov passes by them in a golden carriage. Bugaharka de Dava. So he passed by them in a golden carriage. Uparis Alea Sarbala. And he was wearing a very expensive cloak. Sarbala Rash Sarbala de Karsi. Tzevet Tcheles. He was wearing a Tcheles like cloak. So he's obviously very choshev. He's in a gold wagon, a gold ketna wagon, gold carriage, and he's wearing an expensive cloak. Rava Azul Agabe. So Rava went over to him to Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Azul Agabe, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Excuse me. Rava Azul Agabe. So Rava went to him. Rava went to him. It's Rava and Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. It's Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov who's in the wagon. So Rava went over to him. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak did not. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Lola Azul Agabe. So Rav went over to him because Rav says somebody in such an expensive carriage, wearing such expensive clothing, must be a member of the house of the Reish Kalusa. Therefore, Rav said it's good to get in with the members of the Reish Kalusa. So on the other hand, so Rav tzarech lehu, ana lo tzarech lehu. Rav says Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, on the other hand, said I don't need to go with him. Why? Because Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak was the son-in-law of the Nasi, so I don't need to get in with the house of the Reish Kalusa. I've already got my protexia. Ki dechaza de Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov hava azil legabe gali ledare amar shadja nashiv. So we'll say, listen to this. So Rava goes, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak did not go. When Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov saw Rava, so what happens? Gali ledare, he was rolling up his sleeves. Amra Shadja Nashiv. In other words, it was an exceptionally hot day. He went out and he rolled up his sleeves. Why? Shadja Nashiv, we need the wind to blow. Amar Rava Hachi Amar Rav. So we'll say they began to speak about the winds. So Rava said, this is what Rav said when speaking about the Ruach Mizrach, speaking about the easterly wind. The easterly wind is so strong that Isha Mapalaspa, a woman miscarries because of it. Ushmol Amar Afilu Margalis Biyamar Akevespo. Shmuel said that the eastern wind is so detrimental that even the precious stones in the sea ultimately rot as a result of it. Rav Yochran Amar Afilu Shechvas Zera B'may Isha Misarechesbo. Even the semen that's inside of a woman turns putrid as a result ultimately of the easterly wind. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Ushloshten Mikra Echad Darshu. They all dash in the same pasuk. What's the pasuk? Kihu bein achim yafri yavo kadim ruach Hashem imidbar ola viavoshu mekoro. So we'll see how they dash in the pasuk. Yavoshu mekoro. Literally, the makar will dry up. Zu mekoro shel isha. This refers to the womb of a woman, where even if there is seed in the womb, ultimately the easterly wind will dry it up. Viyachrav ma'ayano. Ultimately, again, the ma'ayon will dry up. Zemekar shel isha, that refers to miscarriage, excuse me. That the womb will dry up, that refers to a miscarriage. That because the easterly wind is so strong, that a woman can even miscarry. V'yachriv ma'ayono, ultimately, again, the source will be destroyed. Zesh shechvas, zera shem ma'isha. Ultimately, again, that refers to the semen inside of a woman, that it could even dry up. Hu yeshasa osar kol kli chemda. He will go ahead and literally destroy the entire storehouse. All precious things, zu margolius shebiyam. This refers to the precious stones in the sea that can even be destroyed ultimately again by the easterly wind. Amar Rava, ade sora hu didaiki kroi. Look at Rashi. Ade sorahu hadavra hazeh mimne surahu didaiki kroi. We learned this particular teaching from those in surah who are medaik in the pasuk. Maikihu ben achim yafri. What's the meaning of the phrase? Ki he is the son of brothers. He will be fruitful and multiply. Amarava afilu shufsa tap of lamadeis. Ashufilu shufsa bikofina demara rafia. I will say even shufsa rashes base yad. Kofi, literally translated, even shufsa bikofina means the handle in the hoe will become loose. I was about to say that the easterly wind is so strong that what? that the wood itself loses its moisture, that the handle that normally fits into the hoe will become so dry that it will become loose. Rav Yosef Amar Afilu Sichsa Bidafna Rafya. So Rav Yosef said, because of the easterly wind, Rav Yosef says that even Sichsa, Rashi says over Sichsa Bidafna, Yosef Shebetofen, even a peg that was put in the wall will become loose, though, meaning the eastern wind is so strong that it dries up all of the moisture. Rav Acher Bar Yaakov Amar Afilu Kanya Bikofsa Rafya. Even if you have a basket that's made from reeds, ultimately the eastern wind is so strong that it removes the moisture from everything that even the reeds become loose in the basket. Hadron Aloch Kol Aget. I will say Mazel Tov. Emirat Hashem will begin the new parak tomorrow. I also Emirat Hashem. There's a beautiful piece in the Sefer Pinimim Yikarim that we're going to talk about the episode with Geneva. So Emirat Hashem will have some more time to do that tomorrow. Shikayach.